Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solotropia, Solotropia, Solotropia.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman back for another Solartopia Green Wellness Show. Glad to have you joining us. We're going to be joined today by two wonderful anti-nuclear activists, Deb Katz, from Vermont Yankee, the Citizens Awareness Network, and Susan Shapiro from at Indian Point, north of New York City, from the don't quite remember the exact name of her group. She'll tell us when she calls in. I want to talk today first and foremost about Fukushima. The usual flood of terrible news. But let's have Deb and Susan join in with us now. Deb and Susan, you're both there.
I'm here.
Hi. Okay, both of you can sing a duet. Deb has been on the show. Actually, both of you have been on the show before. Deb is at the Citizens Awareness Network in Western Massachusetts and Vermont, relaxing and enjoying the fruits of her magnificent victory, of the group's victory over Vermont Yankee, which I guess is still operating. Is that correct, Deb?
It's still going to operate through at least November or December next year, which has never happened before. This is another experiment that's unfolding in Vermont at this point.
Well, what do you mean it's never happened before? What's unique about this situation?
There hasn't been a nuclear corporation that said they were going to shutter a nuke and then continue to operate for another year, especially with the financial vulnerability that Entergy at Vermont Yankee, but in all of its merchant plants, is exhibiting at this point. So there are real concerns about safety during this time, because there's the potential to not keep up with maintenance. There are, you know, concerns that workers who are afraid of losing their job or are going to start leaving to find other jobs, but that the issue of safety conscious work environment is going to be degraded during this time. There are a lot of concerns with this next year, in fact.
Woof. All right. Well, let's get into that in a minute or two. We'll come back to that. Susan Hito Shapiro, what is the name of your organization, Susan, that you're affiliated with?
The Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition.
IPSEC.
And we're a coalition of about 70 groups, and that includes people in the area, Radiation Public Health Project, Riverkeeper, Clearwater, and a bunch of other groups that we all work together.
All right, so we have two really great activists. And you are in Indian Point. The two reactors at Indian Point are operating. I know you're relatively close there, having slept on your couch. And you one of those reactors is operating without a license, correct?
Yeah, as of September this year, Indian Point 2's license expired, and they haven't been able to approve a new license because of the waste confidence issue, which is now currently the big issue nationally, that there's no a federal plan for the waste. And the courts have held that they can't issue any new licenses or any extended licenses for any reactors until this is resolved. And it was actually started with our group, and then Attorney General Schneiderman is the one who really spearheaded this, and other attorney generals joined in, and the D.C. District Court held that there is no waste confidence, and that the NRC's plan was originally, well, we'll just let it sit there for another 60 years and it's fine, it's okay, we don't have to do any studies. And the court said, no, you have to do an environmental impact statement and look at the long-term impacts of storing this waste now all over the country on site, which was never what was agreed to when these plants were first sited back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. There was always the thought, the plan, the agreement was that the federal government would take ownership and take possession of the waste that was being produced and put it into some sort of safe geological depository. That doesn't exist. So therefore, Indian Point can't be licensed at this point. So we're operating without a license.
If my driver's license expires and the cop stops me, I can just tell him that to call the NRC and everything will be fine. Is that right?
Yeah, sort of like that. But it's even really worse because everyone calls it relicensing, but, you know, it really isn't relicensing. It's very clearly stated that it's a new license. So they're actually operating on an expired license. It's the first time historically this has ever happened also. So it's a whole new reality that nobody really knows what it means.
Okay, well, this is all a whole new reality. I love that sound. I just sent Deb an email. Deb, you've just informed me that you have to go at 3:30.
I do.
So let's start with the Vermont Yankee in deep depth. I'll save Fukushima to the end there, and we'll deal with that later. So you have been active in all the New England nukes, but most particularly, of course, Vermont Yankee. So and of course we celebrated on this show a great victory announced a shutdown coming at the end of next year of Vermont Yankee, the nuclear plant west of Boston, north of New York City, on the Connecticut River. So fill us in now, Deb, on the latest developments there, what your concerns are, and how we're going to proceed with
this reactor. Well, there are a number of things going on. Entergy is operating Vermont Yankee, in fact, without a license from the state of Vermont at this point, and has been operating without a license for going on 2 years. They have yet to get a certificate of public good from the state. They are in a hearing process in which the state will either permit them to operate for another year or not, or will permit them to operate with many conditions put on them in terms of what they can do, which may in fact have to do with issues surrounding decommissioning. That is the issue that is in the forefront. Besides the vulnerability in this next year, the state and people that are living in Vermont, as well as the tri-state community, are really concerned about the options for cleaning up the site. And, of course, this is another experiment because this is really the first commercial merchant plant to decommission in the United States. And I want to – not everyone may understand what a merchant plant is. Most reactors have operated as utilities in which they have a rate base to go back to if they run out of money. Yankee Row and Connecticut Yankee, when they ran out of decommissioning funds, went back to their rate base and got permission to charge the ratepayer for the increases in cost to clean up the sites. But Entergy has no rate base. It sells its power directly in the open market. And so there are inadequate decommissioning funds, as there are with all nukes. But the difference is there's no rate base to go back to. There are questions of Entergy actually delaying decommissioning for 60 years, which fills everyone with dread and horror because there isn't any guarantee that Entergy will be around in 10 years, let alone 60. So in a certain way, the whole world is going to watch how they get through this, and the state is actually in negotiations with Entergy because we believe it's essential that certain commitments get made. One is that the fuel comes out of the pool upon closure and goes into dry cask storage. You know, Vermont Yankee is a sister reactor to the Fukushima Mark I reactors, and that fuel pool will remain vulnerable and dangerous as long as the fuel is in it. So we believe that has to take place and that, in fact, they should start decommissioning and keep the skilled workforce employed in cleaning the site up and doing a responsible and thorough job. But it's not clear where Entergy will get the funds to do this, just as it's not clear that Entergy has the funds to run the reactor in this next year safely.
Well, they were never running it safely. So
well,
the question
but to
that,
run it safely because of finances, besides their systemic mismanagement and maybe their incompetence, now add to the fact that Entergy, as in terms of these merchant plants, is a sinking ship. You know, both Vermont Yankee closed on finances. Fitzpatrick is potentially going to close as well as Pilgrim because they are losing money. Entergy has to run these reactors 24/7 continuously to lose $100 million in the next 2 to 3 years.
That's impressive.
Isn't it impressive? It's nerve-wracking.
Right. Now, how far are you personally from Vermont Yankee?
I'm 16 miles from Vermont Yankee and 4.5 miles from Yankee Row, which at this point is a high-level nuclear waste dump. So,
yeah, but now we shut that one in 91. That was a big victory.
Big victory, but all of these nukes are really toxic waste dumps. I mean, Yankee Row will never be released for unrestricted use, not because of the radiation, but because of PCB contamination.
Jeez.
I mean,
there's a nice little hooker
for you. And they're toxic dumps from the time they begin operating, but it's only in decommissioning that you really see the colossal failure of nuclear power.
Well, unfortunately, we're seeing it way before decommissioning at Fukushima, but we'll get into that later.
Yes.
Does the state, if the state decides to not allow Vermont Yankee to continue to operate due to lack of license, are they going to be able to enforce that?
Well, they would go back to court. This would be, they could reject it. In all likelihood, it looked originally before Entergy revised its, you know, basically its petition to the state because it was looking for a 20-year license, and it was unlikely to us that they were going to get it. With the one-year license, you know, the state had opposed the continued operation for 20 years. The potential for them to get a one-year license is much greater, but with many conditions. The potential, though, as well, was for Entergy to go back to court over this, and it may yet happen again. I mean, one of the things the state is asking for is that they can't dump hot water into the river anymore to operate, so that the thermal pollution has to stop, which will cost them a lot more money to use their cooling towers. There were other conditions put on their being able to operate, setting up a green fielding fund for cleaning up the site for standards that are stricter than what the NRC sets, you know, in terms of cleanup. There are a number of conditions in this. But meanwhile, the reality is that Entergy is between a rock and a hard place. They don't have the money. They can't run the reactor, which we're grateful for, but they don't have the money to clean it up. And at the same time, their responsibility to then guard that site and ensure that it remains in a reasonable condition until they clean it up is questionable as well. They're about $500 million short of what they need.
Wow.
Well, you should show them how to do a bake sale. That would probably. You've done a lot of bake sales today.
Well, we did. We've done a lot of bake sales, but you know, this is, you know, we Agree and Pilgrim Watch and other groups submitted a 2.206 petition to the NRC over the financial vulnerability of Entergy at, you know, Vermont Yankee. This was before it announced its closure. Fitzpatrick and Pilgrim raising reports by UBS, which is a financial analyst in Switzerland, about Entergy's potential to operate and lose large amounts of money, as I was talking about. And we asked for an investigation of this. The NRC accepted this petition, and the staff at the NRC asked for information from Entergy, not just on Vermont Yankee, but on its other merchant plants. And what happened was higher-ups at the NRC shut the investigation down, which triggered Senators Markey and Senator Sanders to basically demand that the NRC explain itself in terms of doing this. And actually, A.G. Schneiderman in New York wrote a letter this last week to the NRC supporting our petition and asking that Entergy's books at its merchant plants be open to New Yorkers to understand how vulnerable Indian Point is at this point, as well as these other nukes.
This is vulnerable to a lack of funds to properly run the place.
Yes, that this really compromises safety, because if their bottom line is such that they're that financially vulnerable, then the potential is for them to cut corners.
Well, they should just do what Tokyo Electric Power is doing at Fukushima, which is turn to the mafia and bring in workers on buses and let them get exposed and then send them off another day or two. We're talking with, that was, by the way, the major article from Reuters, which I posted at nukefree.org, talks about the underworld presence,
yes,
the mafia presence at Fukushima. Quite terrifying. We're talking with Deb Katz here from the Citizen Awareness Network. She's worked for decades on Vermont Yankee, and Susan Shapiro in New York, who's been working on Indian Point, both of which are owned by Entergy, which has very serious problems. Susan, you're feeling repercussions, no doubt, of these financial issues. What are the chances that Indian Point will kind of get knocked down in the wake of what Deb has been doing at Vermont Yankee?
Well, there has been a recent financial analysis by Morgan Stanley that says that Indian Point, it will not survive either financially. It will close because of finances, not because of all the work that we're doing, but very similar issues. And A.G. Schneiderman asking for the books to be opened is a really big thing, because what they do here at Indian Point is they've been claiming for years that they supply 25% of New York's energy. Well, we know that's not true, because New York Power Authority no longer buys any energy from them, and Con Ed only buys 350 kilowatts. And so megawatts. They're clearly not going, they're not buying that much power, but we don't know where they're selling it or for how much. And that's been a big question in New York, because it totally relates to the lack of finances. And for years, they have not been keeping up with the decommissioning fund. In 2008, the NRC let them put their decommissioning fund at Indian Point into the stock market. So they lost a ton of money on that. And even prior to that, they were only increasing it by 1% a year for cost of living, when cost of living at that time was closer to 3 or 4%. So the decommissioning funds everywhere around the country are appallable. And there has been a new ruling out of the D.C. District Court that they can't collect any more funds for Waste Confidence or Waste Yucca Mountain, for example, because it no longer works. So this is a real thorn in the side of the nuclear industry, is this waste problem and the decommissioning problem, which is hopefully going to be where all the plants in the country are going towards, but it will be a whole new problem, a whole new ball of wax that we're going to have to deal with. And Deb's right about the lack of funding, and where is it going to come from when they're not making any money anymore off of us, off of the risk that they've put us all under?
It's become a big issue. Decommissioning has become a big issue at San Onofre, also in California, where they're fighting over what to do with the waste. But in New England, Deb, you've talked about the disposition of the fuel rods. You want them pulled out of the reactor and put into dry cask. But isn't the idea of dry cask to have them sit in the pools for about 5 years before they go into the dry cask? What's the debate going on about that?
The reality is that most of the waste, which is old, that's sitting in the fuel pool, they have 13 casks on site. They'll need about 58 casks altogether, although they may need a couple of more once they cut up the internals. There are parts of the internals that in the core of the reactor that are so hot that they can't go to what is called a low-level waste dump. But they can start taking that fuel out, and by the end, they can take out the hottest fuel and also casket. So that's not a problem, but it needs to be acknowledged that all the rest of the waste, I mean, that high-level waste will sit on site for decades, if not centuries, because they don't have a clue about what to do with it. But there's all the low-level waste, and that waste is going to Andrews County in Texas. And you can just imagine that Texas is really looking forward, Andrews County, to getting the waste from Vermont Yankee. You know, we went down to Barnwell, South Carolina, when Yankee Row and Connecticut Yankee were shipping their waste to that community, which was poor, rural, 46% African American. And Yankee Atomic, the corporation that was shipping the waste, was seen in the newspapers as a carpetbagger. The truth is that the nuclear industry engages in environmental racism and puts poor communities in a position to choose between long-term health and safety and short-term economic survival. And it's unconscionable. But it is also allowed, and it will take place because Vermont has a contract with the state of Texas. But limiting the waste that has to go there then, letting them work on the reactor, but holding off in terms of shipping the waste out right away can be really important in terms of the dump community and how much toxicity they have to accept. You know, there are no good solutions. Everything in nuclear power involves bad solutions, and you're always looking for the best of the worst as the way to get through it.
What's amazing about nuclear power is, and now we're seeing this, of course, we're in this stage of the senility of the reactor industry, is how complicated and demanding just the shutdown of these reactors is. It's, you know, people have been saying no nukes all these years and demanding that these reactors be shut, and now we get to the point where they are being shut, and it's a continued nightmare.
Yes, it doesn't stop.
Well, the heat doesn't stop. The fission process doesn't stop. That's the problem. And the only thing that has ever been investigated, because somehow it was made into law, is geological depository is the only thing that has ever been studied. And there is no geological depository that's safe in this country or anywhere. Or if one exists, it's only for a very limited amount of waste. At this point in time, we have 27,000 tons of nuclear waste in the United States right now, and more is being created every day these plants keep operating. And what Deb didn't mention in terms of one of the problems with getting the waste out of the spent fuel pools is that now they have, because they operated a lot of plants, I think Vermont Yankee was operated, they now have this high heat waste, right, which is it takes much, they don't actually even know how it works. They're not even sure how to store it. They will not, high burn-up waste, it's called. They will not issue any licenses for casking it for more than 20 years because they don't think the casks will work. They're just starting to study it, and their answer, their response to why it's okay is because they don't know any better yet. And so it's very hard. It's like arguing with them about something that they don't even know about. And every plant, every reactor community in the country now has this high burn-up waste. And it's really super, super crucial and dangerous. And that stuff needs to be protected right away and stop being made immediately. That's something we can't even wait on.
So
Vermont Yankee actually has very little of it. It right, only started using it much later in terms of operation, if at all. So, I mean, most of the waste for us can get moved. It certainly is a problem. It's a problem just like the merchant plants, in which the NRC is in no way ready to deal with a situation in which these corporations are financially vulnerable. You know, they wanted deregulation because they wanted to operate on the open market. They pushed for deregulation. And now that they've got it, they're all whining because they're going out of business.
Right.
Well, let's remember, though, the reason they pushed for decommissioning was so that they could get so-called stranded cost money.
Yes.
And they went in and they said, and with a straight face, which is amazing, nuclear power was, of course, too cheap to meter. But now that we want to have an open market, for energy. But before we do, we want you to pay off all our debt so that we can have a level playing field. So,
yep.
Of course,
but they,
many states
they even
paid off
the debt, and now they're going under, even with that.
Right.
Even with the handicap, they are now going under and whining about wind and solar and gas, of course, because fracking is helping to take them out. But the reality in all these situations in which, you know, with Vermont Yankee and other nukes, it's all the obstructions we put in their way that forced Entergy to close. The economics finally got them, but it got them because they couldn't get a power contract in the state of Vermont. They had the legislature and the governor against them. They had the people against them in the tri-state community, and they were obstructed left and right until they had to walk away.
But I think even beyond, I think you're absolutely right about what in Vermont that's true, but I think it's proving to be that the entire nuclear industry is not affordable. I think that this whole issue of waste is proving that it's not affordable. There's no way to finance the future of storing the waste for years, and now it's becoming a reality.
Well, I think that's true, but I think it's not economically viable to run them.
Right.
They can't run them cheap enough.
Right.
They're losing money. Entergy could not come in below 6 cents a kilowatt hour, even though the state then got contracts. We don't get any power from Vermont Yankee anymore. The state came in with power contracts at 4 cents a kilowatt hour. They can't compete.
They can't compete.
Can't compete.
We're talking with Deb Katz and Susan Shapiro. We're going to break in about 3 minutes. What's astounding now is that after spending all this money on the nuclear reactors, then getting the public to foot the bill for their overages and all this other stuff, and so that they're running plants really with no debt in terms of their construction costs, and they still can't compete.
They can't compete. That's right.
It's a failed industry. It's a failed science experiment. It was a science experiment that didn't work out, and it's time for everybody to wake up and let's stop doing this. We can't afford it. We can't afford it in so many ways, health-wise, environmentally, and financially. It's just it's a failed science experiment. And it's time for everyone to say, you know what, it was an error that was made, and we need to stop that error continuing.
Deb Katz, you've got to leave us. It's
3:28.
Give us
leave.
A couple minutes,
this has
and
been
then we'll
a lot
go to
of
a break.
Fun. So you guys make them miserable.
And Deb, before you go, the Mark ones, can you tell people about how they store the waste?
Because they, at the Mark
like
one reactors, they store their waste outside of the fuel pool, outside of containment, suspended 7 stories in the air in a pool that basically has a metal roof. Although the NRC has gotten them to reinforce the roof, the fuel pools at the Mark I reactors are the most vulnerable in the country. The National Academy of Sciences in 2005 came out with a report saying that they are most vulnerable to acts of malice and that the fuel should be removed from the pools and put in dry cask storage. And what did the NRC do? Nothing. So on that horrifying note of driving people crazy, I'm going to say goodbye.
Well, thank you very much, Deb Katz,
from
Citizens Awareness Movement. We're going to in Vermont, and congratulations again on the great victory of getting Vermont Yankee shut. And as we can see, when it comes to nuclear power plants, shutting a nuclear plant is just the beginning of the nightmare. We're going to take a short break here, but come back for the next half hour with Susan Shapiro, talk about Indian Point and a number of other things about nuclear power. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Pipelines, mega dams, Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan, oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam, road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solar Topia is home sweet home. hydroplanes get you home in under an hour.
Okay, that was our great friend Dana Lyons singing the Solartopia Rocky Top version. Dana has a fantastic song, Cows with Guns, the anthem of the vegetarian movement. I think he's gotten over 2 million hits on that one. And YouTube, take a look. You will love it. We're second half hour here. We're going to be with Susan Hito Shapiro from the Indian Point Coalition, aimed at shutting it down. Susan, I want to ask you at the top of this half hour, what do you think the odds are that we're going to have one or both of the Indian Point reactors shut within a year?
I'm not very good at betting. I'm hoping that we're going to succeed at, but you know what? I really don't know. I don't know the odds on that. I think it's a long shot, but I think we got to keep working on it. The ASLB, the Relicensing Board, just came out with a ruling, on Thanksgiving Eve. And there were 9 contentions, and they only held that one of them withstood their test, basically. One, which is the transformers aging management plan, has to be done by Entergy, which they didn't have. And they'll just create a new plan, and then the ASLB will probably say, oh, it's fine. And I think it's, like Deb said before, it's a matter of keeping pressure on them. And the two things that can really close Indian Point right now that could happen within the year is, one is that they have been appealing the ruling from the DEC regarding closed cycle cooling.
Wait, what's the DEC?
Department of Environmental Conservation.
When you use abbreviations, tell us what they are in full.
All right, okay. It's the New York State's Department of Environmental Conservation that ruled that Indian Point has been thermally polluting the Hudson River for years, and that they have to install cooling towers, which is very standard for most energy plants. And they've been arguing it and fighting it for years and years, and it went to the Supreme Court and back, and they're still fighting it, but it depends on what the final ruling is from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And then there's another ruling that has to come down from the Department of State regarding whether they can renew a license or get a new 20-year license on the Hudson River. And those are two state mechanisms. But, you know, in terms of the federal government, in terms of the NRC actually shutting this plant, I doubt that the NRC is going to shut it. They did, amazingly, they found actually that the contention that Clearwater brought regarding environmental justice was valid. However, the ruling was, well, Clearwater raised all the issues and did all the work of the NRC, so the NRC can rely on what Clearwater did, basically. And so though they didn't do it properly, the litigation itself is what the ASLB is relying on for the licensing board, the NRC licensing board.
Well, if the state of New York demands cooling towers, now we would assume that, or have they already?
They have, and the Entergy has been appealing it for years, and now we're at the point of the final appeal. And if they stand with requiring the cooling towers, then Indian Point will not be able to be relicensed unless they put in the cooling towers. But they've been refusing to for years now. It would be a big turnaround for them to do it, and once again, it's a big financial expense to them to do that. So, you know, we believe that maybe they will negotiate like Oyster Creek. In Oyster Creek, it was negotiated to allow them to operate for a certain amount of time and then close, similar to what they're doing in Vermont Yankee. Well, it's not exactly similar, but you do end up with that problem of a plant that is going out of business. How much money are they going to be putting into their safety? How much money are they going to be putting into making sure, you know, it's running safely when they know that they're going to be shuttered soon?
Well, these are two reactors. I want to clarify for everybody. These are two atomic reactors. There's a third one at Indian Point that's been shut for many, many years. But these two atomic reactors are continuing to operate 45 miles north of New York City. Our studio and everyone in it would be wiped out by a major accident at Indian Point. And we have been trying to, people like Susan Shapiro that we're talking with, have been trying to get these two reactors shut for a long, long time. Now, we do have a helping hand, finally, at the Attorney General's office in the state of New York, Mr. Schneiderman. The governor has been vocally anti-nuclear, but hasn't done much, has he, Susan?
He hasn't done much lately, but, you know, the Attorney General has been, when he was Attorney General, he started the relicensing challenges, and it was passed along to the current AG, and they did a great job in terms of the one thing they did get was this transformer maintenance plan was required, and just today in Arkansas, Arkansas Nuclear One, transformer blew up. The transformers at nuclear plants are a real problem. They blow up all the time. We've had multiple transformer fires at Indian Point over the years, and it seems to be a component that they can't get a handle on. So
there's a PCB problem with transformers, right?
Exactly. Then they leak PCBs. When they blow up, there's usually a big leak of PCBs into the river or the water body.
And God knows we had issues with PCBs in the Hudson River.
Yes, that's from GE. That's a different plant further upriver, but it's still the same kind of situation. And it's you know, the bottom line is that Indian Point is considered by the NRC to be the plant that's most likely to have a serious problem, a serious accident. For a variety of reasons, its age, its condition, its location on two earthquake faults, its intense population density around it. And I just want to clarify, I think you said 45 miles from New York City. It's actually 25 miles from Times Square. So it's a lot
25
closer.
Miles from Times Square, two reactors in Indian Point. Now, I had a tiff with one of those pro-nuclear people. It's amazing how they're still around. That said that the hijackers who hit the World Trade Center in 2001 decided not to hit Indian Point because they thought the containment was too strong. What do you got to say about that?
We've been told the reason that, you know, that that is totally untrue, because the reality is they didn't have to hit the containment. All they had to hit was the spent fuel pools, which is all the waste in it that is so densely packed. It's four times more densely packed than it was designed to be, because once again, they have no place to put the waste. So they just keep changing the standards of how it's packed. And these fuel pool buildings at Indian Point, they may not be in the air, but they're in corrugated steel roofed buildings, sort of like a big Walmart, in pools of water 40 feet deep. We already know Indian Point 2 fuel pool is cracked. They don't know where it's cracked because they didn't require them to inspect 60% of it, but they know it's leaking into the groundwater and ultimately into the Hudson River. So with the terrorists, they didn't hit Indian Point because the reality is, if they had, they wouldn't be recruiting around the world. It would have been the end of terrorism. It would have been way too big a crime for anyone to tolerate. But
yes, the property damage would have been the trillions. The human toll would have been in the millions. But it was something they did consider.
That's what they found. That's what I believe the CIA found, that they found the plans for it, and there was even there was some documentation that they were very close to doing it, but they were talked out of it because they thought it was too big a target, to be honest. But it's
too radical.
Also, I mean, it's only 7 miles from West Point, where our whole future of our military is, basically. So it is probably the most attractive terrorist target in the nation still. But,
terrifying,
yeah.
Absolutely terrifying, and we're seeing it at Fukushima. Now, are these points, the Indian Point, similar to the ones at Fukushima?
No, Indian Point is doesn't store its. It's not a Mark One. It doesn't store its fuel up in the sky. One thing, along with what Deb was saying before, is we really think that all the Mark One reactors in this country should be immediately shut down and their fuel taken out of these seven-story hanging spent fuel pools. You know, but Indian Point isn't one. Indian Point has a whole bunch of other problems. It doesn't have fire safety protection. They were exempted from actually putting in the proper fire insulation. So instead of the 3-hour requirement of fire safety protection, we only have 24 minutes of fire safety protection. We have two natural gas pipelines that run right along the plant. I mean, there's just, it's, You know, prior NRC commissioners have said Indian Point is in the wrong place and it needs to be shut down. It's insane to have a nuclear, three nuclear reactors 24 miles or 25 miles from Times Square.
Who is the manufacturer of the Indian Point reactors?
I believe it's GE. No, Westinghouse. Westinghouse.
Oh, these are Westinghouse reactors. Okay, so
yeah. I don't know that.
What do you think the key, Susan Shapiro, is to shutting Indian Point in the near future? What's our best avenue here?
Our best avenue is keeping pressure on New York State Governor and the DEC and our state agencies is our best, our quickest and fastest way to shut this plant. If we rely on, have to wait for the NRC to shut it or for Congress to have some serious oversight, it's not going to happen, I don't think. We're in a different situation than Vermont Yankee, because Vermont Yankee was contractually agreed to that they would not continue operation if the legislature said no. Indian Point had these permits that are required, absolutely required by the state, and if those permits aren't in place to use our Hudson River, which is, you know, the historic river, then they are not allowed to operate the plant, and that's with the federal government. That was from the time they cited the plant. It's not a new agreement. It's the very basis of the agreement. So I think that's the fastest way.
But the way the utility works is that if they lose at the state level, they just go into federal court, and it takes forever, right?
Right, and it may become a state rights, you know, battle if that's what happens. They might try to, you know, put it into state court, but hopefully by that point they'll realize that it's a losing battle and that they should, you know, cut their losses, which financially they're in very bad shape, while they can. You know,
let's look at Entergy here. Entergy owns the two reactors at Indian Point, the reactor at Pilgrim in Massachusetts, and the reactor at Vermont Yankee, which is going to be shut at the end of the year. They're very vulnerable, isn't that correct?
Yes, and we've been told that all, like Deb was saying before, all their plants are losing money, except Indian Point is still making them money. But we don't know how they're making money, because they're not selling it to New York City anymore. Well, they're selling it on the grid somewhere. Nobody, because their books are closed, nobody knows where they're selling this energy to or for how much. And our energy rates in this region are extraordinarily high. And we don't really know, because of the way the market has been structured, where they're selling it to. We do know that in the Sandy, during the storm Sandy, that everyone in this region knew that we needed to have candles and flashlights because we were all going to lose power because the wires were going to go down. The off-site power at a nuclear plant was going to go down. And we had people calling the NRC and the governor's office saying, please shut down Indian Point. The storm is enormous and we don't need the power. They continued operating that plant up till 10:40 at night when they had to have an emergency scram, which is the most dangerous way to shut down the plant, when at that point in time the roads were closed, the wires were down, trees were all over the place. It took weeks to restore the infrastructure to even get around. And they continued operation because they were selling the power somewhere on the grid, somewhere else for profit.
Now, this is hard to fathom here. You're saying that this gargantuan nuclear plant, 25 miles north of Manhattan, that threatens the entire Northeast, and the public doesn't know who they're selling power to?
Yeah. That's true.
That's staggering. I mean, it's really amazing. How did they get away with that?
Well, what happened was we had a Governor Pataki who allowed it, who said they used to have to report, and then he disbanded the reporting. They stopped reporting. They passed the legislation which said they don't have to report anymore. And I guess he was in their pocket.
Yeah, well, that's a safe guess. We're talking with Susan Shapiro of the IPSEC, the organization struggling to shut down the two reactors at Indian Point, which threaten all of the New York area, including our beloved studio there on Broadway on the west side of Manhattan. Have you ever, Susan, done a real appraisal of what kind of damage could be done? God forbid there's a major accident at Indian Point.
Yes, we actually did a couple of years ago, we did a property value study, which was based just straight on actual property values from the tax assessors. It wasn't based on human life or businesses or anything. And the property value in the 50-mile radius of Indian Point, this was a few years ago when property values were actually quite down, but at that point it was $8.5 trillion. And they're only insured for billion dollars. So that's like a 0.1% insurance. The rest of it means that we, the public, not only the New York public, but the entire country, is insuring Indian Point and all the nuclear plants. And we really are the insurers, the public, and we should be treated as insurers rather than as annoying stakeholders to the NRC. They should be giving us the respect as the insurers of these nuclear plants.
And have they done so?
Not at all.
This issue has been raised. Now, what about the human cost? What about the health cost of a major accident at Indian Point?
Well, there's about 20 million people that live within the 50-mile radius of Indian Point. So the impact on that would be astronomical. The ability to evacuate this region is impossible. We don't have any infrastructure, roads to get people out. Many people in this area don't have cars or their own transportation. And we don't have a great public transportation system outside of the city. So people would be stranded. And then in terms of the health impact, we already know that currently with low-level radiation that's being released from Indian Point every day, the thyroid cancer rates and the childhood leukemia rates around Indian Point are very high, extraordinarily high. And if people want more information on health, they can go to radiation.org, and there's tons of peer-reviewed studies on the impacts of health here, as well as health on Fukushima, on infant mortality throughout the United States, and different health impacts of reactors all over the country.
Well, do you have what you believe is convincing and irrefutable evidence that radiation from Indian Point is doing damage to the health of the people in the area?
Yeah, I truly believe the marker, well, it's not I believe it, but the thyroid cancer group, I forget what the national group association, and basically all doctors acknowledge that thyroid cancer is caused by exposure to radiation. It's the number one cause of thyroid cancer. And the rates around our plant and thyroid illness and infant thyroid problems and childhood thyroid problems is astronomical. And I think that's the marker, and it has been no study nationally, but that would be a study that would be very telling if we could do thyroid cancer around nuclear plants and see how it drops off. I mean, we could see the drop off from 5 miles to 20 miles to 30 miles. The closer you're in, the higher the rates.
Talking with Susan Shapiro here, let's finish up this joyous hour here with Fukushima. We know that the legislature in Japan now has passed a state secrets act, which is going to severely curtail the information coming out of Fukushima. And of course, this is what we would face in the United States if it ever came to that. Have you had much of a response within your area organizing to Fukushima? What if anything has changed since Fukushima in terms of organizing to get Indian Point shut?
Well, I think what's changed is that we realize now that there is no independent monitoring of the radiation releases from Indian Point and maybe many of the other plants around the country, that the operator, like Entergy, is the one who actually does the monitoring. And similarly in Fukushima, that this is part of the state secrets. They don't want people to know how much radiation is getting out there. And when they did want to know, they had to get radiation monitors on the population. You need to have, everyone should actually be having a radiation monitor and should be fed into a network so we can see where we stand, because it changes and we don't even know our background radiation. And that's what, you know, we became very aware of how vulnerable we really are and how many secrets there are that are kept from the public about nuclear. And Fukushima, you know, is every day we're holding our breath. Is it going to be a further disaster, or will they be able to maintain at least a modicum of control that they have at the moment? And if their state secrets, we'll never know if something, God forbid, really does go wrong. We won't know until somehow someone else picks it up, some radiation detector somewhere else picks it up. It's very,
yes.
We really need a movement of monitoring, of, you know, independent monitoring, so we know where we stand.
We don't right now. We're talking with Susan Shapiro from IPSEC, the Organization for Shutting Down Indian Point. If there was a major radiation release from Indian Point, Susan, how would we find out about it?
Well, the way it works now is that Entergy will call our emergency services people, and they'll tell them that, oh gosh, there's a release, you gotta, you know, evacuate or something of that nature. But the county and the town supervisors and the mayors are waiting for Entergy to call the emergency services people to tell them. Now, we've had a history here with Entergy not reporting releases and accidents. There was a transformer explosion in 2000 where there was a major release and they didn't report it for months. This has happened over and over again. So, since you can't smell, see, or feel radiation, nuclear radiation, we really are in the dark. The public's in the dark about this. So at this point in time, that's the only way that there's any official, notification. We have started an independent monitoring program. We have about 20 Geiger counters now all hooked into a network together, and we're trying to expand that. And we nationally, I think, there are a bunch of other groups doing that. But that's really what we need, hopefully can expand.
So basically you're saying that if a major radiation release happens at Indian Point and everybody is put in danger, we have to wait. We only find out if Entergy decides to give a phone call to the state. Is that right?
Yep, basically.
Is there no independent radiation monitoring being done in the Indian Point area?
There's just a handful of independent citizens doing it at this point. No, nothing official. Nothing.
That's staggering. Do you have a Geiger counter yourself?
I now have a Geiger counter because I'm part of the group that's monitoring. But it's really is staggering. And, our money that we're paying on our utility bills for nuclear safety should be going to getting everyone a Geiger counter. And making sure we're all hooked into a network that is functional, and that
except
we can
Geiger
get
counters don't
time.
Pick up all the different kinds of radiation. I mean, there are some radiation that it does pick up, and some it doesn't. And we're finding that at Fukushima, there are hot spots around Japan now. Horrifying reports of damage in the Pacific Ocean. We're really over the edge now into apocalyptic territory, as far as I'm concerned. I will be posting an article today at nukefree.org that I've written called Japan's New Fukushima Fascism, about the horrific State Secrets Act that's been posted by the Japanese government, giving Prime Minister Abe very, very extensive powers to clamp down on information coming out of Fukushima. It sounds like we're not doing much better at Indian Point. Do you expect anything from the new mayor of New York City? Has he said anything about Indian Point?
Not yet. We are hopeful that his history showed that he was, involved with the movement when he was younger. We're hoping he still is and he hasn't changed positions, but we haven't heard anything about it yet directly. It's just hearsay at this point that he's on our side. But there's been no action yet. Clearly, he's not in office yet. So, Bloomberg was not really helpful at all, except for that he did call for a lot of renewables, and the renewables are coming on board here. We're getting real renewables, not fracking. They are trying to put in pipelines all over the place. In fact, they're trying to put in another pipeline right at Indian Point, on top of the two that already exist. Which is, what engineer thinks of these things? They also are planning a desal plant 3 miles downriver from Indian Point, we know it's leaking. There's evidence it's leaking into the Hudson River. So it seems that our government and our engineering infrastructure doesn't pay attention to what other things are going on.
No, they don't. And that's our job. Susan, you've been a wonderful guest, and you've been a great activist over the decades. It's been an honor to have you on. We've been talking to Susan Shapiro from IPSEC, the group to shut Indian Point. This has been another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness show. Next week, we'll have Chris Busby on to talk about the health effects in general of radiation all over the world. But, Susan, keep up your great work. I hope I'll be talking to you soon, as with Deb Katz, about the shutdown of Indian Point, as she was able to talk with us at Vermont Yankee. Thank you so much. Thank you for all your great work, folks. We'll be back again next week with another hour of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. Thanks to the folks in New York City. Endangered by Indian Point, let's hope this show helps us to shut down, and we'll see you again next week in Solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got...